Blog Talk Radio.
Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of Galactic Club, and today our guest is Neil Sanders, who is an expert on mind control and has written two books called Your Thoughts Are Not Your Own, Volumes 1 and 2, and he exposes the evidence for officially sanctioned mind control programs. And he also has degrees in psychology, film, and media studies, and is a qualified hypnotherapist. And he spent years collecting and analyzing declassified documents, scientific papers, court transcripts, confessions from doctors, and testimonies from victims and whistleblowers. So, Neil, would you like to introduce yourself a little bit more to our audience before we get right into it?
Oh, yeah, sure. Hi, how's it going? Thank you very much for having me on. That pretty much covers it, really, to be quite honest. I've always sort of been interested in mind control and anything a little bit off kilter, you know, serial killers or, you know, conspiracies of any type, really. It just fascinates me. And, like, I mean, the reason that conspiracies exist is, well, there's several reasons. One, because they're fun, let's be honest. Like, everyone likes a bit of a conspiracy, finding out new information, finding out things that might be true, things that, that perhaps are implausible to some, are entertaining. You know, you can't deny that. The other reason is that basically some people basically sort of use it as a sort of way to define themselves as, I don't know, a bit anti-establishment, a bit other, a bit different, something like that. There is an element of that. The third reason is because basically there's government programs to inject material into other societies in order to destabilize them. Like, I know on the surface it seems like everyone kind of gets on to an extent, but there's loads and loads of sort of disinformation campaigns and information that's seeded through various sort of media nodes in order to undermine the government of different countries in order to basically further the interests of other countries. And that's absolutely 100% provable. And the final reason, and the most important reason, really, is that conspiracies exist. There are crimes, there are conspiracies, there are secret medical experiments, there are government programs, there are systems in place to ensure that the current power system exists and continues to exist with little or no interruption and input from the majority of the population. And that's why it's interesting.
Cool, thanks, Neil. And so what are, like, some of the most interesting mind control programs that you've come across in all your research?
Well, I mean, they're really more sort of terrifying. I suppose the one that I always think is, I mean, there's several. The one that I always think is particularly nefarious is the work of that was utilized by people like Ross Addy. And essentially what this was they have a chart whereby they would create certain or evoke certain emotions in people, like white hot rage or feelings of lust or feelings of sadness or feelings of terror or whatever, and they can record that on an encephalograph, you know, that sort of wobbly line thing that you see in sort of science fiction films. There basically is a pattern, and this was discovered to be universal. Each sort of brain has a distinct electromagnetic, or I don't know if that's actually correct, but electric pattern that it gives off when a certain emotion is felt by the brain of the user. And what was discovered by the US military is that if they basically piggyback these waves onto microwaves, they can beam them at people, and it sort of causes a sort of a disruption, a sort of almost a pattern interrupt on the actual brain, and it believes these signals and these responses to be organic, and so it mimics and uncontrollably resonates the emotion that was desired by the person who sort of posted there. So essentially since the 50s and 60s, the US government has had a beam weapon that can basically change the emotions of people. And it's very rare that they actually talk about this. Well, sometimes they do. I mean, bizarrely, in the sort of like sort of mid early 2000s, Raytheon started talking about technology that they were trying out in prisons, which was basically putting voices in people's heads, or synthetic telepathy in the heads of prisoners, to disturb discomfort and to discourage them from doing violent activities whilst they're actually in prison. And then obviously there's other things like silent sound, which is the same kind of thing, but it works on a different principle. It works on a subaural level, which basically means that the sound is positioned and hidden behind music in such a way that it's not audible on a sort of tangible level, but it hits the oral nerve, and therefore the message is clearly picked up by the recipient. And they used this in the first Gulf War, in Operation Desert Storm, and they admitted to this and then denied it. And then the company that was the manufacturers of the technology actually admitted it on their website and boasted about it for many years before they dissolved and were no longer a reality. But basically they used this on soldiers on Iraqi soldiers during the war to instill an emotion of terror, a complete terror in them, so that they would give up fighting and they would basically surrender, even though they could have continued fighting for quite a long time. There is an argument that is a humanitarian use of it, but it's undercut by the fact that that was a completely set up invasion by encouraging them to slant drill into Kuwait. But you know, that's another story. There is another one that basically they experimented with this. I haven't seen a lot of stuff about this recently, but they were experimenting with putting certain magnetic waves, deep brain stimulation in the helmets of soldiers. And they found that it was bizarre, really. I mean, it sounds like science fiction, but it essentially gave them sort of certain savant qualities. It made them a lot stronger, gave them a lot more stamina. It made them apparently a lot sharper intellectually, and gave them the capacity to withstand pain and to go without sleep for a long time. And this was a device that was sort of being tested in the helmets of US Marines. And what was slightly disturbing, or incredibly disturbing, was they were trying to combine this at the time with the use of certain drugs and, again, sort of electronic implants that would... There was two things that they were trying to do, and this was pitched as a way of controlling PTSD in soldiers returning from war situations. One was that they were going to wipe memories. They were going to basically completely wipe memories so that traumatic event no longer affected you. And the second one was they were going to basically introduce drugs that would alleviate guilt. So that means that you've got these sort of super strong soldiers that are sort of impervious to pain, that can go 3-4 days without eating or sleeping, that have absolutely no sense of guilt and can have their memory wiped at the end of it. I personally found that somewhat troubling. The potential ramifications of that are, shall we say, a little troubling. You know, that you're in Universal Soldier territory there. It's mental, and it's been admitted. It's been reported in the press. It's been bragged about in sort of industry magazines and that type of thing. It's a strange old world.
Yeah, that reminds me of the Mancunian candidate, that movie.
Manchurian candidate.
The Mancunian candidate was the guy from Oasis. Noel Gallagher.
Yeah, and Denzel Washington.
Yeah, the Manchurian candidate was one of the films that basically sort of piqued my interest in this. A friend of mine forced me to watch it when I was quite young. I was totally not interested because it's black and white. It's got Angela Lansbury in, so who the hell cares? But like, it's actually a fantastic film. Actually, I was quite lucky. Like on the Arrow There's a Blu-ray edition of the Manchurian Candidate film called Arrow Films, by a company called Arrow Films, and on certain editions of that, there's an essay that's basically taken from my first book about the sort of real MKUltra sort of the military applications of mind control and potential sort of mind control victims and declassified documents and stuff like that in the booklet of the Blu-ray.
Cool. And what kind of gave you the enthusiasm or the drive to become a hypnotherapist? Like, how does that tie in with your kind of research about mind control, and how have you used that qualification?
It doesn't really tie in other than the fact that I understand that hypnosis works. I mean, I was doing a degree in psychology, and I took it to a certain point. And I was in a job that I wasn't particularly happy with, so I was toying very much with going back to university and pursuing it further to the point where I could be a qualified psychologist. But that didn't pan out because basically I couldn't afford to do the course and have the time, et cetera, et cetera, and work at the same time. It was just, it just was not plausible. But in the interim, I decided to learn hypnosis just because. Well, basically, I'd had some hypnosis when I was younger, and I've a few friends that have had hypnosis. And bizarre as it is, it's an incredibly useful tool for treating all sorts of ailments, both physical and mental. So I thought it'd be really useful to sort of learn it. And the way that I learned it initially was a quite basic sort of script-based way. And I'm not totally convinced that's very effective. It can be, but it's not as effective as some other methods. So I was quite lucky to learn a certain type called curative hypnotherapy or Lazarian hypnotherapy. And that it does a sort of regressive technique, not sort of past lives or anything like that, but just going back into memories. And it utilizes an ideometer response, which basically means that you don't talk to the person, you set up a mechanism whereby they answer with their fingers. Their one finger will raise for yes, another finger will raise for no. And this is to basically bypass what would be called conscious interference so that you can delve deep into the subconscious. And it takes a bit of sort of like tinkering and stuff like that. It's almost like tuning in with a radio. But essentially what you do is you track this back and find the initial incident that caused them to set up a belief about themselves so that when they faced an unpleasant scenario in their adult life, that was the sort of go-to response that their brain had programmed in to react. And that was perfectly okay when they were 5, 6 or whatever, but now it's actually more of a hindrance because the main premise of this sort of treatment is that any symptom that you come to us is essentially a defense mechanism of the brain. It's either trying to sort of prevent something from happening or punish you or somebody else for something happening or avoid something from happening or that type of thing. So it is incredibly. It works. It's really bizarre. Sometimes I've treated physical symptoms as well. I'm starting to sound a bit like a sort of woo quack now, but basically like things like sort of self-harm and helping people with weight loss, obviously stopping smoking, anxiety, depression, stress, that type of thing, insomnia, but also, as I say, things like psoriasis and pulling your hair out or grinding your teeth or other habitual things, even things like adult acne can be treated with hypnosis if it's done in the right way. And again, that sounds like total medical woo, but I've treated psoriasis and I've treated the stomach thing, what's it called, irritable bowel syndrome. And
IBS.
Other things. Yeah, absolutely, which are, you know, considered physical symptoms, but the logic behind that is essentially your subconscious mind controls every aspect of your metabolism, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, it's not suggesting that you could make you grow a foot taller or anything like that, but certain ailments are a mental reaction rather than a strictly physical reaction.
I have a question for you. With your research into mind control and the different programs that have been put out by the government and the people that are controlling the world and manipulating the human farm on this planet, like people manipulate the cows and with the injections they give to them, et cetera.
Yeah.
Did you come across the manipulation of dreams and the remote viewing that the governments do? And can you share anything about those subjects that you've found?
Well, I mean, I've read the Jim Mars books, and I've read the Jim Ronson book, Men Who Stare at Goats, which sort of is the expansion of that team. But other than that, not really, if I'm brutally honest, because I don't know is there's a huge amount out there. I got the manual off the internet once and tried it, but it didn't seem to work for me. But I'm not terribly good at concentrating for long periods of time like that. So that's possibly why. And other than the stuff that basically, you know, other people have written, not really, I'm afraid. But I'm sort of aware of it. It's a bit strange though, because the remote viewing agency, I forget who it was exactly. Stubblebine is the name that comes up, but I don't think he was involved in that specific aspect of it. It was owned by, or it was bought out by Cytec, and Cytec is a CIA functionary. It's basically it's an element of MKUltra, which is a bit weird. A couple of people who basically sort of I forget exactly who it was, but I seem to remember a couple of people who like interviewed the people who were close to the remote viewing people. They then reported some weird happenings in their life sort of after that. And you wonder, because there was a program as well called MK Often, which was essentially tied into the human potential movement and things like Esalen and like yoga and transcendental meditation and all that sort of stuff, particularly during the sort of hippie movement. Not to denigrate any of those things per se, just that essentially the CIA found that it was really useful to sort of look in these things. As a number of ways. One, to sort of corral people; two, to see if any of this actually worked; and three, as a sort of cover for more sort of bizarre experiments and stuff like that. So there is entirely a possibility that the whole thing was a bit of a cover in order to, you know, draw people in for whatever reason. But that's really very speculative. I don't have any sort of hard evidence to that at all.
Cool, thanks, Neil. Yeah, you've done a lot of research. It's cool to hear. And have you spoken to any whistleblowers, like, personally?
I've spoken to a few people who have worked on Silent Sound, and I've spoken to a lot of people who are concerned that they have sort of, like, implants or are being tracked or monitored or that type of thing. That's not my particular forte, so I always point them in the way of ICAT, which is an organisation that seems to be able to deal with that. And I get quite a lot of sort of, you know, information from people that email me and stuff like that, where as the veracity of it is very, very sort of difficult to say. I've certainly spoken to some soldiers that have been involved in Silent Sound and shown me sort of pictures and things like that. So I'm very much with that. What I tend to do though is look at the sort of the documentation, really. That the majority of this is in the public domain. And that's the sort of way to sort of draw it together, really, because it does sound sort of fantastical, a lot of it. So what I'm always trying to do is back stuff up and have a genuine sort of not only a sort of a coherent narrative around why this is and who it is doing this or whatever, but also some sort of a formal documentation or some sort of like tangible side evidence. And if I don't have that, I'll basically say, you know, I'm speculating or this is my theory or whatever. But yeah, they're, I've spoken to a couple of soldiers.
Cool. Thanks, Neil. And what made you write the book Welcome to Cell? And
oh, it's not actually a book. It's a DVD. What it is was I was invited to do a conference called AV5, which a chap called Ian R. Crane puts on every year. And I was going to do a sort of standard mind control thing, fairly nasty, talking about sort of serial killers and Manson and bits and stuff like that. And Ian was like, I don't really want that. Like, can you come up with a new idea? And I was a bit stumped, so I thought, well, what can I do? And it was in front of a live audience, like a sort of a big live audience at a conference. So I came up with the idea of talking about the tricks of marketing and tricks of the advertising world, and tie that with a few sort of revelations about lies in the way that food is produced and how it's not as nutritious as it might be, or particular methods that celebrities can use to make their public persona seem more sort of seem better, basically. And so I thought, well, how can I do this? So what it is really is a two-part, it's a comedy thing, really. It's a presentation where I play the part of an evil salesman. I've kind of based it on the Alec Baldwin character from Glenn Ross. And it's as if I've turned up at the wrong conference and I'm there to teach the audience how to become better salesmen and how to trick consumers. And I'm going to take them through all the different ways that you can trick consumers. And so obviously the joke is that it's actually sort of, you know, revealing the tricks of marketing. So I play a character and I act like a total arsehole throughout the entire thing. And as I say, very arrogant and brash. And it's there's two parts to it. They're both on YouTube now, basically. Like I did a two-hour version. The first, what the DVD is there's an hour version of one talk, and then there's another hour which is sort of expanded. It's other stuff. There is now the two-hour version on YouTube. So it's called Welcome to Sell or the Dark Art of Marketing. So if you go on YouTube and look for the two-hour version of that, it's on YouTube, so you can watch it for free. But it was just that, basically. I'd not produced anything for a while, and I had the ability to put it onto a DVD, so just put it out. I like it. Like the problem with it is that a lot of people, I don't think they're expecting the tone of it. So it is very, very tongue-in-cheek, and it's very, very dry, and I've got an incredibly dark sense of humour, so there's some very off-colour jokes in there. And, it went over very well live when I've done it. I've only done it two times, so I don't plan on doing it again. What's bizarre is, off the back of it, I've had quite a few, like about half a dozen people get in touch with me who've obviously seen it, and have mistaken it for a genuine thing. And they've got in touch with me asking if I'll do a marketing campaign to promote their business or to promote their club. And I've had to very politely explain that it's a joke and that I'm not actually qualified to do that. And they really don't want to pay me a lot of money to do anything like that. So, hopefully I find that quite amusing.
Yeah, thanks, Neil. We'll be sure to watch it. Sounds like a bit of fun. Do you think you could just share a couple of like highlights maybe from that so people can maybe see things a bit differently in the everyday lives, like maybe some marketing subliminals that you're not aware of right now?
Well, I mean, it's all things like, I mean, one of the things is basically spurious rigor is one that I'm particularly fond of. Spurious rigor is when you'll see an advert and it will say, this will increase your facial moisturization by 11.7%, or reduces aging by 17.4%. And the idea behind that is that it's obviously nonsense. You've made it up, or you've manipulated the figures until you've got that number. But if you say a number as precise as 17.3%, the inference and the assumption from the audience is that, well, they've really taken their time over that. That's incredibly precise. They must be really, really rigorous, and therefore I can trust what they're telling me, that this particular product is going to make me look younger, or make me look prettier, or make me look whatever. There's loads of things. The appeal to nature is one that's particularly prevalent. It's essentially, there's an idea that if something's natural, it's good and it's better. And in some cases, obviously, that is the truth. Like, there's that phrase that, you know, if it says low sugar, what this means is a storm of chemicals. And so obviously there is a case to be argued that nature is naturally better in some cases, but the way that it's used in marketing is to connect things to nature, like a box of oats or jam because it had fruit in it. And the nonsense about that is that none of these products are actually natural. The 2 points, Joe. One, none of these are natural. You'll never find jam in nature, right? And the second point is some things that you'll find in nature, like dog feces and foxgloves and rotting carcasses of dying birds and things like that. That's perfectly natural. I don't want that spread on my toast, right? But that's the sort of the point that it's sold in this very sort of blinkered sense that this product has a connection to nature and therefore it's good. And it's one of these things that, like most of marketing ploys, with a quite small amount of picking apart, it just falls to pieces. And another particular one is that basically, this isn't actually included, well, it might be actually in the second part. Clotaire Rapet is an incredibly wealthy sort of man that's made a huge amount of money from marketing. And the main principle that he says is that you've got to listen to the reptilian brain, or you've got to appeal to the reptilian part of the brain. Because essentially they like stuff and pleasure, and they're going to go for the easiest, most pleasurable option, the thing that's most beneficial to them on a personal level. Now, in order to get them to relinquish that, because that's what they want, you've got to give them a justification. Now, the best example for this is the Hummer car in America, which is a terrible car. It's just a terrible car, and every aspect of it's not a very, very good car. But it's got an incredibly successful, same with the Ford F-150, like pickup truck, terrible car, sells incredibly well, got an incredibly positive brand identity and image, and people love the car. Why? Certainly in the case of the Hummer, and to a lesser extent with the case with the Ford pickup truck, because due to its engine size, because it's a weapon. Because, I mean, very specifically in the case of the Hummer, it's a weapon. It's a device that will get you out of a situation or protect you from a situation. And it's a way of you saying, I am superior to you on the road because of X, Y, and Z. I believe they're both sort of quite high-sitting cars as well. So you can literally look down on other people as you're driving along. Now, how do you justify that? Well, basically you say, well, this is the safest car on the planet. I can get out of trouble like that. If somebody hits me, I've got armor plating on the side, so they'll die a long time before I do. That's brilliant for Sandra and the kids. I'm being a good person. I have a weapon because this weapon is there to save my family. And it's not. If we're being brutally honest, it's there because you want it, because it makes you feel powerful. But that's the key to marketing and advertising, is you've got to play on these sort of psychological impulses, but give people an out so that they can justify this, and they're not admitting to this sort of quite base urge that essentially you're fulfilling, and therefore you can have your cake and eat it too.
Yeah, that's great. You touched on two really interesting topics there with the nature and the reptile brain. We support the all-natural environment, supporting all of us, and we have these wonderful projects such as the Nations United Universal University and the All Solar Research Vessel projects. And, yeah, we see that it makes sense to support the natural environment, supporting all of us. People are unaware of what the natural environment really is. Like you said, you know, the birds and the animals, they're out there, they're just doing their thing, and it has nothing to do with, you know, like healthy natural food. It's, in a way, the natural, healthy natural food is really all there should be. And so people are so disconnected from nature now. And yeah, I see that in the advertising, the so-called like green movement and advertising and things like that. It's interesting how people just... Sorry?
It's an appeal to an idea, isn't it? That's why things like an iPhone are so popular, not because they're a particularly good product, but because the concept of having an iPhone or having a Mercedes-Benz or having a Rolex or whatever, it projects a certain image. And it invites you to a club and a lifestyle, and it presents, well, it's not real, but it gives you the concept that you are living the life. And a really, really glib sort of like thick end of the wedge thing, if you own a yacht, woo-hey, yacht time, brilliant, look at me, you know I'm wealthy, I've got a yacht. And to a lesser extent, you can sort of show that by having some Jordans or whatever. And it's a sort of vicarious pleasure. Taking off this sounds shitty, but taking off the accomplishments of others. And again, I don't mean that in having a go. It's everybody does it. Absolutely. I'm not averse to it. You'll always see me in some obscure punk band t-shirt or obscure black metal t-shirt. And that's so that everybody knows, wow, he's the sort of guy that listens to obscure metal. Wow, he's interesting and different. Everyone does it. Like, you know, you're not immune to it. But again, this is the point. These are the things that sort of essentially quite human qualities that often people don't want to admit to. That psychologists in the marketing and advertising industry are very aware of, and they're very aware of the ways to sort of like, you know, get you into groups and make you feel secure and give you a certain amount of psychological comfort and a certain amount of aspiration, and to get you on that treadmill of wanting the next best thing and the next best thing and the next best thing and the next best thing. And it's quite seductive, because it gives the illusion of solving certain problems, at least for a time, or at least giving a dopamine response from your brain that actually gives you a certain amount of tangible pleasure. That's really, you know, nobody could be you can't have a go at people for that. That's life's bloody hard. And that's the other sort of flip side to it, that basically, you know, civilization is structured in such a way that you have very limited leisure time and you have very limited opportunities in life. And so any opportunity to get, like, you know, cheap, I don't know, designer products so that you can sort of show off a bit or whatever, I can see how that would appeal to people. Because, as I said, you know, you get very, very little opportunities. The horrible thing about it is that these aspirational things don't really give you pleasure. And the problem is that basically, as I said, you're sort of buying into that thing. So now that basically, you know, you've acknowledged to a degree that you're playing the game of one-upmanship or whatever, and you'd probably be a lot happier if, as you said, you sort of disconnected from the whole thing. And didn't play that game and understood that that's, you know, clothes don't necessarily make it for man. And you can have as many toys as you want. You can have as big a house as you want. You're still you. You know, you can be anywhere you want to be in the world, but you're still you. And so it's more important to sort of try and realise and sort of make yourself happy with simpler things, really, to be quite honest. I mean, like, don't get me wrong, yeah. I'm not happy. So
yeah,
like,
I see what you're saying.
Put me an email.
Yeah, of course I see what you're saying, and really I was trying to say that we see the same thing here, and yeah, we're sharing lots of wonderful things with people, and at the same time we're sharing, you know, what's really taking place here on the earth, and there's a whole lot going on, and most people aren't paying attention, and they're just going along with what they're taught and indoctrinating schools, educational systems, the media, and all sorts of things, and yeah, there's a whole lot, you know, to see through, to eventually see, you know, why we came here and what a real purpose could be. And what we're doing is we're sharing, you know, why we came here and why, and a way to wake up to what we really is, which is free beings of real light. And that's a lot for some people, and that's okay. Everybody decides their life. So, yeah, we're on our adventure.
I mean,
I was wondering, needless, sorry?
So my personal opinion is that one of the sort of most troubling things that's going on at the minute is that most people don't live in reality, they live in virtual reality to a large degree, either on their phones or via social media or through a projected image on Instagram that's not actually real or achievable. Or, do you know what I mean? There's a lot of fakery that's going on and there's a lot of... Well, there's so much personal fakery, and there's so much sort of industrial fakery that's going on the internet as well, where basically people are sort of like, there's this outrage culture, outrage on both sides of the political spectrum. More so on the right, I think, actually, because they're always outraged at this and that and blah, 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 and like stoking nonsense through like outlets like the Daily Caller and Breitbart and InfoWars and stuff like that. And we've got some very... Essentially, the majority of the right-wing media outlets are financed by either the Koch brothers or the Mercers or the DeVos family or the Rosenwald family the Regnery family. And that's Richard Spencer and Ben Shapiro and Stephen Crowder and Candace Owens and Miley Yiannopoulos and Steve Bannon and Tommy Lauren and Lauren Southern and Lauren Loomer and all of these people, Tommy Robinson and Geert Wilders, Marianne Le Pen, all of these people are basically backed by the same cabal, essentially, who have got very, very obvious connections and proven connections to MI5, MI6 and American intelligence and British psychological intelligence and military intelligence as well. And at the minute, there's a huge campaign of riling people up with fake news and fake stories on the internet. I've done a blog series about a company called Cambridge Analytica. And Cambridge Analytica is essentially, it's a military operation of the English government. It's got a List X clearance, which means that it can hold secret documents and hire. And it's a weapon that's under export control. Now, what this does is it steals your data from Facebook and all other social media and sets up a psychological profile of you that continuously learns. And then it sets up bots, fake profiles that have got an AI program in them that basically act like real people. And they interact with you to learn more about you. And it analyzes your likes and your dislikes and what websites you go on and what things that you share. And mainly it's trying to focus on what makes you angry. And what it will do then is it will personally market stories towards you that are guaranteed to rile you up and guaranteed to get you particularly angry. And Cambridge Analytica was used by two prominent companies. It's been used by over 100 in over 100 election campaigns over the years, which is, you know, a British military operation altering over 100 elections over the years, admittedly. But the most recent ones were, it was used by the Trump campaign at the behest of Robert Mercer and Steve Bannon, who are investors in the company. And it was used by the Brexit campaign. And the main tactic that it used on both of these was to spread lies about Islam and lies about immigration, lies about Sharia law, and specific stories that would anger people and prey on people's fears and prey on people's feelings of disenfranchisement and and to a certain extent, prey on people's racism and xenophobia. And that's really, really concerning that basically this company was used so heavily by these two campaigns. Don't get me wrong, like, I'm not having a go at you. If you voted for Trump, you may well have had very, very good reasons for it. If you voted to leave the EU, you may well have had very, very good reasons for it. What really, really troubles me is that this military contractor with connections, direct connections to British intelligence, this is a weapon. It can't be used without the British government say so, also wanted that result, which means that it doesn't matter your particular reasons. For whatever reasons, certain elements of the British government and the American establishment aristocracy, if you will, the Koch brothers, the Regnery family, the Mercers, the Wilkes brothers, they wanted Trump in, and they wanted the UK out of the EU. Why? I don't know. I mean, if you look at the sort of environmental rollbacks that Trump's done, the workers' rights rollbacks that Trump's done, and the tax break to the mega wealthy that Trump's done, and the potential contracts that are coming in with the NHS after Brexit, and the fact that the EU will no longer be subject to the EU's the UK will no longer be subject to the EU's offshore trading laws, which means that basically the very wealthy can hide their money in tax havens. That may well have something to do with it. I don't know. That would seem like a particularly likely scenario. What's very, very troubling about Cambridge Analytica is that they're also behind, although the Israeli faction of them were behind the election of Viktor Orban in Hungary. So Mossad got Viktor Orban elected. They were also behind the election of Bolsonaro in Brazil and the elections in Argentina. And they've been helping out with the elections in Poland. And Mossad have been financing right-wing militias in the Ukraine. And this is all connected. This is all the same thing. There's been a particular project that's been going on with the utilization of particular media outlets and connected to this British military faction or British military contractor that has been installing right-wing governments all over the planet for the past 5 to 10 years. And it's quite bold about it, and it's telling people about it, and it's obviously being protected by the British government as well, because basically when the investigation into this happened, mysteriously the warrant kept getting mixed up. So they took all the computers and all the documentation out of the Cambridge Analytica building in the week that it took for the warrant to actually get through, which is, you know, obviously a cover-up. It's very troubling. I mean, like, a lot of people are sort of like on this sort of, oh, communism, ooh, reds under the bed, ooh, blah, 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 socialism, blah, 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 which I don't think is true. I think, well, I know for a fact that a lot of that is Mossad propaganda, because they admitted it via their Black Cube program, which is an extension of Cambridge Analytica. We forget that the establishment in America were, you know, very, very right-wing, white supremacists. We forget that the CIA is founded on the skull and bones, the death's head. You know, it wasn't so long ago that we knew that the Bush family and the Roe family and Schwarzeneggers and various other people like that, the British royal family, were, you know, connected to very, very far-right, particularly Nazi regimes and far-right beliefs and eugenicist beliefs and such like that. And for some reason, that's been lost. And more I'm seeing proliferation of completely far-right nonsense and propaganda being spread throughout the internet. And people don't realise it's far-right because they're not looking at the sources. A lot of it depends on them not reading the actual books, to be quite honest. People talk about the Frankfurt School, and they've never actually read any of the books, because none of the books actually talk about political correctness or promotion of minorities or anything like that. That's not any of the text in critical theory, but that's the cultural Marxism thing. Similarly, the Kalergi plan. Strangely, Kalergi actually was a white supremacist that wanted to maintain Europe's border for the white people and turn Africa into a slave nation to support Europe. But people just put out that one passage about the man of the future will be this sort of combined thing. He wasn't saying that he wanted that. If you'd actually read the book rather than what people had written about the book, then you would understand that he was actually saying that he wanted to keep Europe white, and he wanted to keep Europe as a unit to stop it from fighting within one another. And the Kalergi Award, which is given out each year for one, it was given to Ronald Reagan one year, which sort of flies in the face of him being a good guy, if you believe that thing. And secondly, it's not actually got any connection to the European Union at all. It's a completely separate organisation that was set up by Kalergi himself. And if you look at their, this organisation that actually gives out the award, if you look on their website, they're concerned, their one concern is keeping Europe white. So it's not about this race mixing and this grand, what's he fucking called? That's stupid. Like, where they basically think that there's white genocide and stuff like that. The organisations that they're talking about promoting this are not promoting that. They're promoting the very opposite. But these theories rely on people getting angry and not looking at the source material.
Yeah, Neil, it's just so much going on in the world. It's a huge distraction for what they're really doing. Like, you wrote your books about the mind control, and there's so much more happening in what people call dreams, like the remote viewing, and they're doing all kinds of experiments on people every day, and Trump is a huge distraction for people. It's just a lot of sensationalism and something to divide people and get people to talk about instead of focusing on the natural environment and what does support us. So I appreciate you sharing what you are. And like we've learned, government, what does that mean? It's mind control. It's to control the minds of the people. And we don't need that. We can become more aware and we can all make better choices ourselves. We know what we're doing. And yeah, we can just be real. It does make a lot of sense to investigate these things and what you're sharing, because this is the planet that we're all on. We're all in this together. We're all in the same world, and it doesn't matter if it's happening in this country or that one, because it's all the same planet. If it's over there, it's going to be coming over here soon. So if you can't breathe in China, eventually we're not going to be able to breathe in Hawaii or wherever we are on the world. So.
Oh, completely. Just to sort of explain, so like, I don't like Trump, but I have no problem with anybody just because they voted for Trump. I don't like any politicians. Like, I don't even like Jeremy Corbyn. But I understand why people voted for him, because he played up to their feelings of disenfranchisement, and basically he told them things that were true, that basically they'd been ignored by the elites and that they were being cast aside. Problem was, to my mind, is that he just lied. He just basically utilised that as a particularly clever way of appealing to someone that might solve your problems. And I don't think he's got actually any intentions of doing that. Like, and just to sort of tie back to the Martin thing, make America great again, genius. It's all weasel words, and it's nonsense. It doesn't mean anything. Let's start with America. What do you mean by America? Do you mean the Deep South? Do you mean California? Do you mean Los Angeles? Do you mean America, the corporation? Do you mean America in the sense of foreign policy? Do you mean America domestically? Do you mean America in the sense of being connected to the world? Or do you mean America being in an isolated sense? There's numerous ways that you could determine what America actually means. And it means numerous things to different people, which is why it is such an effective slogan. Great. What does great mean? Would great mean that basically you have no deficit or no debt? Would it mean that you were the controlling empire that ruled the entire world? Would it mean the highest GDP? Would it mean the highest standard of living? Would it mean the highest standard of equality and personal and social interaction? Would it mean the best healthcare? Would it mean the best social mobility and the best sort of social services? Again, there's loads of different things that you can put your own iterations on that. Again, that's clever because it appeals to nostalgia and it appeals to a mythical past that doesn't really exist. When particularly was America great? Well, it depends again what your definition of great means. If your definition of great was when it was mostly whites in control, well, then it was the 50s. If your definition of great was when you were making loads of money and like doing coke and banging hookers on Wall Street, it was the 80s. Like, it very much depends. And again, you can tie that into your own projection. Make. What does that actually involve? You make a car, you make a cake, you make a bed. Who's going to do it? How's it going to be done? How long is it going to take? None of these questions are answered because that's not the point of a catchy slogan. With the Brexit thing, essentially, they had a very catchy slogan as well. It was take back control, which is brilliant because, again, it appeals to that sort of sense of disenfranchisement. Again, I don't actually think it's true, to be quite honest. Well, I know it's not true because, essentially, some of the lies that were told is that we will take back sovereignty and we'll be able to control our own borders, control our own levels of immigration, and make our own laws again. Now, the problem with those which are, again, appealing on the surface of it, is that we do have sovereignty. The Brexit white paper written by the government that will be in sovereign control once we exit Europe, said that we do have sovereignty. So if you don't believe them now, why do you believe them then? We do make our own laws. That's why we have a different age of consent, different drinking laws. We don't have bullfighting, for example, in England. We also control our own borders. In the sense that basically anybody, it's an EU law that anybody coming to England, they basically have 6 months to get themselves a job. And if they've not got themselves a job, they don't get any benefits and they get sent home unless they can prove that they have a valid reason to stay. The problem is that the British government decides not to enforce that law for whatever reason. The other point about sort of like the stopping of free movement is a bit of a moot point because already the British government has started approaching nurses in Jamaica and certain African countries to fill the jobs that might not be filled if we don't get the influx of people from Europe. And again, people think that I'm pro-Europe. I'm not pro-Europe. I understand all the reasons to leave. I don't trust the Tory government. I don't trust Cambridge Analytica. And I would want to leave on favourable terms. And at the minute, I don't think it was favourable terms. And one of the main problems is that England stole parts of Ireland many years ago. And because Ireland is an island, you would have to put a hard border across between Northern Ireland and Ireland because there would be two customs unions unless we remain in the European Union customs union. And that would be in breach of the Good Friday Agreement. The Good Friday Agreement is the agreement that essentially stops the violence happening between loyalist and republican factions on the differing political sides of the argument within Ireland. There's no argument. England stole it. It should give it back. But the problem is that there's lots of people that live in Northern Ireland who are very pro-Britain, think of themselves as British now. So it's not as simple as that. And again, this is the problem to my opinion, is you were just sold a lie. You were just sold an impossible scenario that wouldn't work. I'm all for leaving Europe, but things like, okay, fine, where are we getting our food from, et cetera, should be sorted out beforehand. That's just sensible.
And a lot of people, they don't know the reality of who they vote for or the politicians or these people that are running the world. And it's a very simple investigation that people can do. It just takes the decision. But one of the simplest things that we have found, and we're with wonderful worldwide educators, so we're letting people know about what's taking place in the world. But the reason that we're wonderful educators is because we show people how to become more aware and free themselves from their restrictions. And what we found is a new sound, and you may be interested in it with your hypnosis, and it's on my YouTube channel. It's the new you, and it sounds like new you. And it's a song that people can sing before bed. It's a vibration, it's a frequency, and it actually assists people and becoming more aware. And it replaces old chants that people have used, because those chants actually relate to different levels within our creation. Like the Om relates to the mental realm and the Hue to the astral realm. But this is a sound that will connect you with life, and a lot of people will begin to have these real experiences when they're asleep at night, when people are dreaming, and they will learn a lot more about what is actually taking place on this world, and they will be able to see if that's something they want to look at, the different people in this world, the politicians, celebrities, and see what they're really doing and what's really happening to them, because it can be hard on the surface world to see behind the curtain, but everyone does have the access to their dreams, which is what the ancients paid attention to, and they taught their children about the other worlds, and they saw the children as the new view, as the new birth to share more with the world. So I just wanted to share that with you and everyone as well, that anyone can test it and write it down and come back and share it with us on our show, or share it with other people, because that is a real connection that you have, and nobody has to tell you. You can just see it for yourself, and then show others how to do it as well. I wanted to ask you if you could talk a little bit about the Charles Manson, your book, and what you found through all of that, and how it relates to mind control.
Not that much, to be quite honest, except in a sort of after the fact sense. Basically, the premise of the book is that I've always been fascinated with Charles Manson, and like there's obviously lots of different theories. And so what I wanted to do with this book was get all the different sort of theories that are out there, which is the helter-skelter theory of Bugliosi, Ed Sanders' theory that he was involved in the Protestant Church of Final Judgment, which is potentially a satanic cult, May Brussel theory that it was part of a CIA mind control program connected to Operation Chaos, the William Scanlon Murphy and Nicholas Schreck theory that it was all part of a drug deal gone wrong, and basically what I wanted to do was put this against a sort of timeline of Manson. I heard from another person the best way to sort of like figure out what's real and what's not is to get an accurate timeline of what's going on. And then when people say this happened on this date, you can go, yes, it did. No, it didn't. Or if someone says that I was here on this date, you can look at it and try and figure out what's gone on. And I've been aware for a long time that there's a lot of strangeness going in the Manson case, like the main story, just like the fact that the defense didn't actually present a case. That was one of the main sort of that's a bit unusual. Like literally the defense did not present a case. They stood up and said the defense rest, didn't call a single witness, didn't rebuttal a single argument of the prosecution, just, you know, hung them out to dry. The fact that Helter Skelter doesn't actually make any sense, like it what, you're kidding, white people said that black people, it looks like it's black people, so that a civil war will start, that's nonsense. And the fact that they didn't continue it, and also that they started it before they found their hiding place, which sort of goes against the whole thing. Also the fact that Helter Skelter was basically taken from Krishna Benta, who was a guru in Box Canyon. The idea of the race war, the idea of hiding in the mountains until they came back and took over the reins of society. This was by a guru who basically did all the things that they said Manson did, like, you know, called himself Jesus and the devil, and had a cult in Box Canyon where they practiced sort of like orgies and that sort of thing. And they just appropriated that and said that Manson did all those things when he didn't actually do those things at all. And so what I did was I wanted to write a book that people that knew about Manson would find something new about it, hopefully. And I wanted to write a book that people that didn't know about Manson could be told both what was tricky about it was I had to tell the mainstream story first, and then go, okay, let's examine the entire history of his entire life and see which of these particular stories stack up and which of them actually adds up and makes sense. And when you look at it, basically, the Murphy and Nicholas Schreck argument is by far the strongest. And that is what I believe to be the accurate representation of what actually happened. That essentially this was just a drug deal gone wrong. And to a large extent, Manson was a scapegoat. And he wasn't a mind control guru. He wasn't a cult leader by any stretch of the imagination. I think he was a pimp. And I think that he was a drug dealer. I know he was a drug dealer. I suspect that he was a pimp. And one of the things I suspect with the other people miss is why they had all the doomies in the desert. That's so that they can get across the desert into Mexico and pick up like drugs, bring it back across the border and evade capture by less agile vehicles. So to my mind, if you track what the Manson group were doing, they're just going up and down the West Coast and then it's like, you know, near the border, up and down the West Coast, then across the country, up and down the West Coast, and near the border, up and down the country, and then across the country. And it's like, all right, they're moving drugs around or stolen cars. And they were definitely involved in car chopping. And Manson had been involved in moving stolen cars and moving girls in Texas and down to Mexico and boasted about moving drugs for mafia figures in Mexico in his youth. And to do these types of crimes, you have to have a degree of overview or tacit approval, particularly if you're going across state lines, of organized crime. And this was an angle that was exposed by William Scott Murphy, but more Nicholas Schreck in his book, which is excellent and has a new version coming out this year, that the connections to mafia figures. Not to say that Manson was in the mafia at all, but just that he rubbed shoulders with certain mafia figures and organized crime figures that allowed him to be involved in elements of organized crime that other people weren't. But essentially what happened was Wojtek and Jay were selling drugs. Wojtek, MDA, Jay, Coke, and LSD. And Wojtek had ripped off Linda Kasabian and Tex Watson, who'd bought $1,000 worth of MDA from him. It was bad stuff. Bobby Bosley had been arrested. And Tex owed Manson one because Manson sorted out a problem that he had with a black pimp called Lots of Pop. So Manson said, you need to sort out this Bobby problem. Bobby's been arrested. You need to sort it out. Tex doesn't really know what to do. So he decides the one thing he can do is get some money together for a lawyer. So he decides, sod this. I've got a beef with Wojtek. I know Jay's getting a load of coke delivered by this mafia guy. I'm going to go there and I'm going to rob them. And that's what he did. He turned up to try and rob them. And it all went wrong because Sharon wasn't supposed to be there. She'd confirmed to Robert Evans, the TV producer, that she was staying at her friend Sheila Wells's. The Manson clan had phoned somebody, and they'd also confirmed that Sharon wasn't supposed to be there. When they got there, she was there, and this caused a problem. Stephen Parent was also there. People started getting killed. I strongly believe that it was Linda Kasabian that actually stabbed Stephen Parent before Tex shot her, so she's not, by any stretch of the imagination, innocent, even though she was the key witness for the prosecution. And they went home, and the police report bears out that the killings didn't happen when the prosecution said it didn't happen at 12:45. They happened about sort of in the early hours of the morning, so that's when screaming and gunshots were heard. And if the gun was broken against Wojtek, it made him unusable. And the same cartridges were used, you know, same caliber weapon, the same weapon was used in all the gunshots. That means that the gun didn't get broken until much, much later, which means that Wojtek and Abigail didn't die until much, much later, which means that essentially they left there in a panic. They went over to Jay Sebring's house to basically try and steal his stash, and that's where they got caught by the Webbers, and then they made a run for it back to the ranch. And Charlie had just come back from San Diego with this young Jewish girl, which kind of puts paid to the idea that he was a rabid racist, although he did have some very dodgy separatist ideas. He didn't feel that black people, white people, should mixed sexually, which is obviously stupid. Although the swastika wasn't a Nazi emblem, it was an Indian sun wheel that he got from a friend of his called Walks on Top, who was a Native American, and it was there to protect it from white people, essentially. But they got back, and Charlie's there, just got back from San Diego, and they explain what's gone off. And he realizes, well, they're going to get caught, so they go back over there in the early hours of the morning, and they kill Wojciech and Gibby, which means that Charlie was the president at least two of the murders, which is not in the mainstream thought. The following day, they went and murdered the Labiancas. Again, it looks like the Labiancas knew the Manson family. There are competing theories as to why they did this. It looks very much like Susan, who was Rosemary Labianca's daughter. She was friends with Tex, and her boyfriend was a straight Satan motorcyclist, and she later sort of made pleas under a false name to try and get Tex out of prison, which is, again, very, very dodgy. So it looks like Susan was kind of involved, but there's also suggestions that Rosemary Labianca might have been connected to the drug industry. She certainly had wealth that was otherwise unexplained, and that perhaps Lino himself was in some degree connected to mafia. He certainly owed Frankie Carbo at least $30,000. And in an interview with Hard Copy, Charles Manson, this is not widely known, but Charles Manson said that he went there to get a little black book from Lino. Don't move or you're dead. And the person said, the interviewer asked if he knew Lino Labianca. He said, no, I didn't know Lino, but I knew Frankie Carbo. Frankie Carbo knew Lino. That's why I was there. Or words to that effect. So, again, this mafia connection that Nicholas Schreck promotes is very, very strong. And the connection between the Beach Boys and the mafia as well, and Elvis Presley and the mafia, and Charles Manson was knocking about Elvis Presley's house quite a lot. There he met people like Michael Caine and other people. And Jimi Hendrix's backing band and certain other people. This is the point to my mind, is that the case was just too dodgy. It would just expose too many dodgy connections to drugs and celebrities and that type of thing. Nicholas Schreck has a theory that it was connected to an ongoing FBI investigation. He may well be right, because you might have a lot of information that in his new book that I didn't have. But I didn't agree with that. I thought that simply the cover-up was to protect the institution of Hollywood to an extent, and the interconnection with organized crime that was a sort of open secret with the Hollywood police and that type of thing. So that's the theory. And one of the main things that I do in the book as well is that basically nobody ever listens to Manson. So what I spent a long time doing is listening to speeches from Manson and then deciphering them and explaining his slang and putting it into sort of words that could be easily understood, and say, well, what he's telling you here is blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. And if you actually sort of read these missives, they're actually incredibly revealing as to the reality behind the plot. I mean, part of the reason that the truth never came out is that, one, they just didn't want it to come out, and two, Manson was to a degree happy in prison. He'd spent the first 33 odd years of his life, the majority of it in prison, over half of his life he spent in prison. He's certainly accustomed to it and institutionalized, and there's an argument that he has a certain religious philosophy that allows him to be happy and content anywhere. But yeah, I mean, the Beatles stuff is nonsense as well. I have no proof to this, but my mind is that the connection to the Beatles was promoted by Nick Grillo, who was the manager of the Beach Boys, just simply because it makes sense to me. Like, the Beach Boys' career could have been ruined by the connections to Charles Manson, and they went on to be play at Reagan's inauguration and stuff like that. So, but the Beatles were sullied, terribly sullied, by the connection to Manson, which was nonsense. It was utter nonsense. Do you know what Helter Skelter was? Helter Skelter was a gambling club that he'd set up on Spahn Ranch. That's why it was written on the door. And we know that to be true because George Spahn got a fine for Manson running an illegal gambling club called Helter Skelter on Spahn Ranch. So, you know, a lot of the so-called mysteries is quite easily demystified.
Thanks, Neil. And we have a couple of callers here. Claudie, did you want to ask or share anything with Neil?
I just thought his presentation was very, very well done. And thank you for your effort. It enlightened a lot of areas that were dark before, so we can know what's going on.
Thank you very much. That's very, very kind of you to say.
Your research is thorough and very well presented, so that even people of a lesser education can get the message. The mind control part of it is right on. We people on the planet are so much in controlled by the corporations of the world, and we are enslaved into a work ethic that's just endless. People get up, go to work at 9, come home at 5, eat dinner, go to bed, you know, get the homework or bathe the children or whatever. They have to get up and go to school at 8 o'clock and get home and do homework or whatever. Our lives are so much of a specified routine. Then
yes.
When we have the freedom to go out and maybe purchase some food, we have the freedom to choose the food and where we buy the food, but we have to buy the food because we don't make our own food. So everything along that line is really spot on. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. But you're absolutely right. I couldn't agree more. You get so little time to be an authentic person because you always got a different sort of face on. You're either at work or you're out in public, and like, you know, I mean, some of the things are good, you know what I mean? Like, you know, the fact that, you know, violence and sexual assault is not considered good is a good thing, obviously. But you're absolutely right. What, you 8 hours at work, 8 hours of sleep, travel, so limited time to be you. And then you've got other worries to be concerned about, like bills and you know, trying to feed your family in a healthy way and like trying to get some sort of enjoyment out of life as well. So I couldn't agree more, and thank you very much for your comments.
Oh, yes. And the one last thing, I have just recently, last couple of years, investigated the new presentation information, and I found it very liberating. I tried singing that new you sound that Miss Brown had spoke of earlier, and the freedom that I experienced came from the dream side of life, where the real story is seen. In the waking state, you are exposed to a lot of different viewpoints. Some are false and some are very accurate. But it's up to the person to learn how to figure it out. And in singing this new youth sound gives you a better handle on how to do that. Again, thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. And, well, I say, please send me that link to that that thing, and I'll definitely have a look at it.
Yeah,
yes,
sure,
sir.
Neil.
Thanks.
We'll send you some. I'll email you some links about what Chloe and Kelsey have referred to. And just one last question before we finish up here. I was wondering if you could share some light on the research you've done about the 5G and how that might change the voice-to-skull technology and mind control in general.
If I'm honest, I've been struggling to find it. I mean, I'm aware that there are people out there that are very concerned about it. And other than the sort of taglines that I've seen in that particular thing, saying that you know, it has a troubling frequency that's the same frequency that resonates with I'm very, very limited on that one, I'm afraid. That's something that I've been trying quite hard to actually to look at, and to try and find the sort of source material for that. So if anybody's got any really good links on that, please send it to me. I've had a bit of a chaotic life over the past couple of months because I've had building work done at home, and you know, life's got in the way, and some stuff's been going off at work, etc. So I've been struggling to try and have a look into that, but I haven't. I'm very behind on it at the minute, I'm afraid.
Okay, no worries, Neil. And yeah, one guy we've looked into is Barry Trower. He was a microwave weaponry expert.
Yeah, my friend Richard Hall, Richard D. Hall, who I can't recommend his shows highly enough. Richard D. Hall, Rich Planet TV, he's great, and he's a really great guy as well. He's he champions Barry Trower, and I was aware of Barry Trower's previous work, but I've just not had a chance to sit down and watch and fully sort of get the gist of it. And like, I was looking for some articles, but I couldn't really find any good ones. So I've got couple of hours, I'll sit down and watch his presentation or whatever. I was aware, who is it? Is it Barry that's been some sort of court case in Newcastle? But the details in all the articles I've read were quite scant. It basically said that, or it implied that they were going to look into it, that they were taking seriously the concept that this might be harmful. And I've also seen a lot of stuff that, and I don't know if this is connected. Please tell me if it is or if I'm totally wrong, where they're cutting down trees because trees get in the way of the 5G signal or something like that, which seems a bit weird because, like, you know, surely if you'd sort of, hey, trees, you need trees. Trees are cool. And, you know, if you're upgrading, why that seems like a sort of that seems like a less serviceable. Do you know what I mean? That's like a step back if trees stop it. They obviously weren't stopping the previous.
Yeah, the 5G, the frequency wavelengths are so short that they can't actually go through, like, trees, and they can't go through many walls like the 3G and 4G can. And so they're going to have, like, lots and lots and lots of cell towers every, you know, 50 feet even in a lot of streets, and they're going to be putting them in little household appliances even, and even inside the new cell phones will have their own little mini cell tower. And,
I'm sure Bay Trout's, like, information is right, so even if that's not troubling on a sort of health level, is that, to me, immediately sounds like, con, that's like the old rat trapper, like, thing of like letting one go every other house and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? If you need more infrastructure to make this thing that you're going to sell as the best thing work and everyone's going to have, then there's going to be more costs behind that, surely, and more maintenance and more purchasing of land and other things like that. It's On a number of levels, that's true. I'm sure there's something to it as well. Like, I just literally am ignorant of it at the minute because I simply haven't had a chance to look at it, I think.
Yeah, there's a lot behind why they're doing it. It's very much along with Agenda 21, and the self-driving cars will use it, and lots of things. It's going to make a lot of people very sick and very quickly too. And one of the things Barry Trower talked about, which is why I asked you, is he taught it audio hallucinations, where they'll be able to tell people to do certain things very easily, like in shopping, you know, in shops, shopping centers, like buy this product and little things like that. And they think that, you know, it's their own subconscious telling them or something, and they'll be able to make mind control slaves very fast and things like that.
I mean, that's definitely a reality. I mean, so we spoke about that briefly at the beginning of the show. You know, Raytheon have proudly sort of spoke about like that as a sort of crowd control like tool, and it's been done. They did it. They were going to do it. There's another one called the Smirnoff technique that they were going to use during the Waco siege, and essentially, what they did. Obviously, some people might not remember the Waco siege. There was a supposed cult there that had barricaded themselves in and was apparently stockpiling weapons, although the details of the entire thing are sketchy, to say the least. And there's different theories. Like there are mind control theories around that, which again, I've not seen any sort of anything that's not circumstantial, but it's not say this. It's not a case. Let's say in MKUltra, they were looking at sort of like the creation of so-called cults to see what public reaction would be and how people acted within groups and stuff like that. But anyway, basically, David Koresh believes himself to be the son of God, and that he was able to translate the seven seals or the hidden seven seals of the Bible or something like this. I forget exactly, but basically, there was a standoff at Mount Carmel, and this what they were trying to do was trying to get them all out. There'd been a bit of a shooting, and some ATF agents had been killed, and some people within the compound had been killed. And they employed, or they got this bloke called Igor Smirnov, who had a device that was, it was basically the same thing, subliminal auditory hallucinations, but done it again in a slightly different way. If you remember at Waco, they were playing like Metallica on a strange loop and the sound of rabbits being killed and that type of thing. So whether they did use mind control techniques, there was ample opportunity to do this. What Smirnov proposed was that under the sound of something else that would disguise it, they would again put this sub-oral thing that would be picked up by the inner ear, but not apparent in the air. And they got Charlton Heston to record a series of lines where he would pretend to be the voice of God, and he would tell David Koresh to peaceably surrender and come out of the at the compound. Now, the ATF basically asked him what his success rate would be, and he said that it was about 60% chance that it would work and a 40% chance that it would send them completely mad and that they would slit their own throats and kill each other. And so the ATF decided that it would be far more sporting to roll a Bradley tank up there and shoot fire into the building and then machine gun anybody that came out the back. And now here's the thing, right? There's been a few Waco documentaries, right? Not a single one of them ever uses the footage that Bill Hicks was talking about that was on public access television. There's still available on YouTube with the final interview with Bill Hicks, where he's wearing the black leather jacket, and he's got long, sort of straight, straggly hair, and he's wearing glasses. It shows a Bradley tank rolling up and using a flamethrower to set fire to the building. So all this, it was accidentally set on fire by the fragment grenades, like dust settling on the floor, and that's not true. The American government murdered these people. But yeah, they were going to use the Smirnov technique as a particular way to try and end that siege.
Cool, thanks, Neil. Yeah, you got lots of fun stories, and you've investigated so many things. And yeah, we really appreciate your time. We're going to upload this video to our YouTube channel, and I'll send you the link to that too if you'd like to share it around on any blogs you have or your website or with friends. And yeah, appreciate it. We'll keep in touch, and thanks again for coming on the show.
Thank you very much. And if people want to read my blog, it's on my website, which is neilsandersmindcontrol.com, and you can get my books and DVDs there, and also available on Amazon and on Kindle, because a lot of people like stuff on Kindle. I like the sort of tangible era. I don't even have an MP3 player. I still have CDs. So I like hard copy books and stuff like that. But 'tis the world, brave new world, and all that.
Yeah, and we have the link to your website in the description of the show here for anyone that's interested too. So thanks again, everybody, and we'll see you next time. Cheers, Neil.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, everyone. Bye.